Good. Gentlemen, we were holding in the middle of a very strange sugya. Now, I'm going to give you my take on the sugya so we can have a better understanding of the astrological nonsense that occurs over here, so you can get a sense of what's going on in the same way that the dream nonsense we also came to understand. Akiva Bibi, your camera is absolutely insanely filthy. Please do something when you come to a safe stop. Do not do it while you're driving. Okay. So we were holding yesterday, right at the beginning of the daf. Today's daf is Nuntet, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. And one of the things that we were talking about was this discussion of the three constellations that are mentioned in the Iyov. And we wanted to understand what was the relationship that was going on over there. And so the question was, what is Ayish, or Ash was referred to in Iyov? And these are not really, they're not major constellations, obviously. These are parts of the large 12 signs of the zodiac. But the Gemara today discusses where they are. So yesterday we spoke about Ash, and we said Ash is Yuta, and Yuta is located in the tail part of the constellation Aries. Some say that actually it's part of Taurus, and it's part of the head of Taurus. So these two are next to each other. So yesterday, the Gemara said this weird thing, that it makes sense to say that it's part of the tail of Aries. Why? Because it says, Va'ayish al-Banea t'inkama, you're going to be Menachem. This is one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making fun of Iyov, who thinks he knows something. So are you going to be Menachem? Ayish, which is Ash, for the loss of its children. The children, obviously, of a constellation would be the stars in the constellation. So you see that, indeed, it's missing from Ayish. So it must have been taken by Taurus. And if you take a look at that area, indeed, it looks like it was Ketarfa Taurus. It looks like it was missing some stars, and that somebody banged on it to make it look like it was all connected, but it doesn't really look properly filled with stars at that area. That's what we said yesterday. And that's the reason, Haida Ozla Basra, the reason that we find that it's following Taurus like that is because it's saying, give me back my children. Give me back my children. This is where we're up to. Haida Ozla Basra, Dom Lahavli Banai, give me back my stars. And how did those stars get to be transferred to a different constellation? So basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to take out these stars, and because of that, this is Ayish always follows Kima, and because of that, it's missing these stars, which left an opening for the Mabul, so to speak, and when it came time to stop the Mabul, Kishabikesh Lesotma, he took these two kochavim from Ayish instead of putting back the stars, and he sealed it up. So Ayish is now missing stars. Ask the Gemara, why not just give back the same stars that were there? Because it's the same thing. If you dig a hole in the ground and you then try to refill the hole, in a bor mitmalei mechulyato. You can't fill up a bor with the dirt that you took out of it because now it's all compressed and so on. It doesn't fill up to the top. That's one approach. The other approach is that since these stars were used to bring the Mabul to the world, so ein kategar na ases sanigar, you can't use the same stars that were there as part of the destruction of the world to now become the defense attorney to be the ones to stop the Mabul. So why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu just make new stars? Because ein kol chadash tachat haShemesh, we don't have new creations. Om Rav Nachman atida HaKadosh Baruch Hu lachziran la, that latid lavo, actually, Ayish Albanat and Rachem, that is read as a positive statement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will actually restore, that Ayish Albanat will be mitnachem. Okay, what does all of this supposed to mean, since to us it's just a bunch of astrological nonsense, and it's no different than the medications that we hear, which also is to us a bunch of nonsense, or the segulas, and all of these things are clearly cultural inventions, as is astrology bichlal. It doesn't matter who tells you otherwise. There is not any serious, as Rambam points out, there's not any serious issues that have to do with any of this stuff. It's all serious to people who are part of the development of humanity at a stage when it was serious. So all of these things are extremely serious to a mentality that is part of the development of such a world and has amazing impact. I mean, I'm telling you, even in my own lifetime, the entire island of Haiti was completely controlled by black magic. And the police only used black magic, and the entire population was absolutely under complete submission to this Meshuggah, to this Papa Doc, because of the fact that they believed in his black magic and in the voodoo dolls that would be found at their door if they said anything against the government. And they invariably died when there was a voodoo doll in front of the door, and that's the way it was. The same thing is true with the changes. Take a look at in terms of medicine. The changes in the approach to medicine, I mean, these things clearly did work, even though the Rambam says, obviously, nothing really works. Because even a experiment, this is the Rambam writes beautifully in the Pirshei Mishnayos, discussing which things are Bechal Shabbos for, which things are considered to be Maisa Emori. So he writes, listen, halavai that you would be getting 100% controlled data from experiments, because you're never completely controlling an experiment, and therefore you don't really know that something works. But at least there's some indication that it has some natural basis. All of these anecdotal things, which we don't find any basis for and so on, those things have to do basically with whether people believe it works or not. Therefore, you can't be Mechal Shabbos on it, and things like that. But it's not considered to be Maaseh Emori. Once it takes on something that's antithetical to any type of normal nature, then it becomes Maaseh Emori, where it doesn't even have anecdotal evidence. And at that point, it becomes Osir. Good. Now, in our sugya, we're going to be seeing some extremely halacha lemaisa issues. The reason I can get away with saying everything that I'm saying is because there is no question whatsoever that the Gemara knows it's talking nonsense. How do I know that? Because we're going to have, on Amud Beis, a big discussion of the inyan of the bracha that is made once every 28 years, which is the Birchas Hachama, which I'm sure you remember last time it was made. I think it's about, it's due again in 2037. So every 28 years, you make this bracha. The inyan of making this bracha, the Gemara explains at great length how amazing it is that the sun goes back to its original place where it was created at the beginning of Yom Revi'i at the Ma'aseh Bereishis and so on, goes through an entire analysis of why that's true. And the entire analysis is based on something that the Gemara knows is a lie. And what is that? It's based on the Tkufa of Shmuel. Shmuel has a very simplified year of 365 and a quarter days, which we do not use la'alocha, because we have a much more exact year of the Tkufas Vavada. And nonetheless, the Gemara bases an entire bracha, halacha l'maisa, on something which doesn't happen. So the Chazon Ish discusses this. And the Chazon Ish points out that the Chazon Ish speaks about this in numerous places, another in Yonim as well, including Yochas Treifas, and the idea of Emosifim ala Treifas, that only the first 2,000 years of Torah are Kavei, and so on and so forth, that the Torah, the Torah is meant for primitives. It was given in order for a human being in his most basic configuration. He's Adam HaRishon, who finds himself on the earth, has no experience, has no tools, except, as the Mishnah lists in Avos, the tools that were created, Bein HaShemeshes, to allow Adam to develop tools, so to speak. And what would such an intelligence conclude about the nature of reality? Because of that, the Gemara does all kinds of clearly nonsensical things that it knows to be nonsense, such as calling pi 3, or calling the square root of 2 1.4, and so on and so forth. Obviously, that isn't true. But it's true, but lahalacha. Why? Because if it comes to needing to be medayik lahalacha, let's say, on the square of the diagonal, the relationship of the diagonal to the square of your tefillin, to make sure that your tefillin are kosher, it's perfectly okay to call the square root of 2 just echad v'chomesh, even though that's clearly not true. Why? Because in terms of the measuring capabilities and the exactitude that is given to a primitive human being, this is the way that you have a right to smooth things out. So basically, remember, this is not just a metaphor. Our brains work by smoothing things out. Most of the data that we have is in tiny pieces of data that the brain has to fill in. 99% of what we see, we don't really see. We're just filling it in. And as a matter of fact, if you lose, chas v'chalila, part of your retina, and you're looking up at something, your brain if you don't move your eyes, will fill in the missing space of your retina, not just by pasting like a cheap Photoshop deal, but by actually creating the vision of the missing area. And you will see it as actually being there. And this, I'm sure all of you have seen the most incredible optical illusions and so on. All of those things are caused by the rounding off procedure, which is the way that we live. In the utter depths of that rounding off procedure, our entire existence, even our dependency on the entire dimension of time, is nothing but a rounding off procedure of the direction of time, which only exists because of statistics, which is ipso facto rounding off. You understand? If it wouldn't be for statistics, there would be no direction of time at all. So we even experience our lives because we round things off. In that sense, the Torah is given to a creature that exists because of inexactitude. And that's the whole point of quantum mechanics. It's the inexactitude, and it's the possibilities, the multiple possibilities that makes us us. Now, therefore, the Gemara has to deal with mentalities that relate to medicine in a particular way at their time, as the Ramchal points out. One of the most difficult things is the subconscious and the relationship to dreams and so on and so forth. What is that all about? The Gemara gives us, once again, I cannot read, but if you're sending it to other people, it's fine. So then the Gemara will point out the subconscious interrelationship to things, which certainly Freud would not have approved of, and which indeed, in completely different contexts, would be a little nonsensical. Now, there's one area where we have a real problem for primitive people. And that problem is how to relate to the external, far, the distant universe. In other words, how do we look at the galaxy as a whole? We're not aware of the fact that there was something other than galaxies, but how do we look at the galaxy as a whole, which we see in terms of constellations, which, again, are little pictures that we simply make up in order to have a convenient picture for the 30 degrees of sky that is going to pass in the course of 1 month, which is also another convenience that we make. It's all rounded off things, right? And the entire structure of our year and our calendar are all rounded off things. When we come up, we stand up and we announce the Meilad. The Meilad that we announce has nothing to do with the reality of when the Meilad is. It's a mathematical trick, which gives us an average kind of time between one new moon and the other, which is constantly different because of the fact that there's even at till today, there's no real single algorithm that will predict for you precisely the celestial mechanics of the movement of the earth and moon is enough to be too complicated for a simple algorithm. And therefore, the whole thing is rounded off. So as the Chazon Ish points out, we want you, Chazal, want you to be able to relate to the way the world is in terms of Maisa Bereishis. To expect a normal person to be able to do the mathematics of Rav Ada's year is ridiculous. It's very easy to do the math on Shmuel's year because you simply divide the 365 and one quarter days, which are the approximate orbit of the earth around the sun, and you divide that by four, and then you get each season. Very simple. And that allows you the 7.5 hours for each season, and everything is great. There's no such thing, but it's a nice approximation to what? To the math? It's ridiculous. No, not to the math, to your experience. And the entire idea of Emunah, as we described in the beginning, is to link your experience in some way to the understanding of what is going on in yourself that allows you to have experiences in a world that is consistent with the way that the Torah is presenting it to you, which is all approximations, and which allows you, as you become more and more sophisticated, in the same way that it allows you to understand V'hameiti Elo after you go through Baba Kama in ways that are insanely complex and that no simple person would have understood, and that every goy who's reading the Bible says, where the heck would they come up with that? Because he has absolutely no idea of the complexities that lie behind every single simple phenomena, much less between the words in the Torah. He has absolutely no concept of it at all. So because of that, as infants, people do not have anything but round-off childish visions, the same childish psukim that are expressed in Parshas Mishpatim, absolutely childish nonsense, ayin tachas ayin, I mean, this is all very nice for Hammurabi. It has nothing to do with what the Torah is saying. And yet from it, we learn the most incredible dinim because we have learned to more sophisticated minds to take things apart and to get further and further into details, which are themselves only rounded off. And because of that, every single door is going to add tons and tons of new insights, new information, and a knowledge explosion that makes it almost impossible to keep up, even with the Pirush on a single pasuk across the Torah, correct? So now, what do we do with the fact that a normal person and entire societies on early on in human development have absolutely no idea what is going on in the sky other than the silly approximations? So what it looks like, again, my experience, what it looks like is that the sun is moving around and the moon is moving around and you've got some of these wandering things that are called planets that are moving around and the earth is standing still in the middle of all these things and then all the stars are going around the same way. Something weird is going on, so we experience it again as this being this vast celestial vault and it's all turning and it's got different levels in it, obviously, because some things are turning at different speeds, like the planets and moving separately. So we make up this transparent vaults that are linked one to the other and then they can move in different ways, like a silly little planetariums that they used to build, not the projected planetariums, of course, and so on and so forth. What do we do under those circumstances with the type of phenomena that we do not understand and that we are still left in order to be able to connect with the phenomena back to Maaseh Bereishis? Now, remember that this is how the whole thing started. Shmuel, who was the greatest astronomer of his time, who said that, to me, the stars in the sky are completely and totally recognizable like the streets in my own neighborhood. I look up, I know exactly where we are, I can pinpoint where we are at the time of the year, I know exactly where the sun is going to come up tomorrow morning, and so on and so forth, but I do not understand what the heck comets are, and I do not understand what the heck meteorites are. Well, of course not. How could he? Because it doesn't give itself, doesn't lend itself to rounding off, because I simply don't have enough data to see a orbit of a comet, which is just going too far out of the normal area of our solar system, is out in the Oort cloud and so on, of which he had no knowledge. And therefore, to him, it was just a violation. What in the world is this going on? Same thing happens, of course, in later generations with experiences of supernovae and things like that. What the heck is that? The new star, which, of course, is the meaning of novae. The new star. Wow, all of a sudden, a new star appeared. It's going to occur to somebody that such a thing as nuclear processes, and that the lifetime of stars is limited in a particular way, and that stars of a particular mass are going to blow up. I mean, this is insanity. Until very, very recently, which we take for granted. So how would they explain? They wouldn't. But how would they experience? That's something else. Shmuel did not attempt to explain. So what it was, and he simply said, I don't know. I simply don't know. Fine. What the Gemara does afterwards is it moves on to mythology, essentially. Astrology, mythology, why? Because in order for a phenomena in the sky to touch us and enable us to experience it, it is no different than HaKadosh Baruch Hu's describing to us the development of humanity and the creation of the earth as the story, which is a completely mythological story, of Gan Eden and talking snakes and so on and so forth, which have no connection to any of the things that we would have identified as gardens and snakes and so on and so forth, and yet manages to give us over the entire interrelationship of the subconscious to Freudian issues and that are, which don't even follow in this story. And somehow or other, every child thinks, yeah, makes great sense. Sure. Cover your genitals because you ate an apple. I mean, it's absolutely nutty, right? But so on and so forth. That's the way mythology works. And it gives you a connection to all of the development that humanity had to go through and why we are in such a mess currently in terms of finding our awareness and our drives to be so confusing to us. This is no different. The Gemara is not doing anything different, kaviyochel, than HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. So in doing this and providing a person at the time of the Gemara with some sense of an understanding, so what would this mean, that there could be changes in the sky, that stars could disappear from here and could suddenly appear there? And how would that be possible? What would a sudden tear in the sky look like if there was something behind it that was light? these things do happen, except they have nothing to do with the issues that the Gemara is telling us about. But that's true about the dreams as well. And it's true halacha lamaisa in making brachas even, or in building your tefillin. So remember, our experience to life is meant to be rounded off. Our intelligence rounds off things. And one of the ways that it rounds things off is through astrology or through mythology. It has nothing to do with causality any more than a segula has to do with causality in terms of medicine. And nonetheless, the Gemara is perfectly happy to present it to you. Nutz gizinter heit kinderlach, as the Gemara says, and as Tosus warns you, don't you dare. It doesn't work. Right? So it's dishtanu ateva. You make yourself sick if you try this nonsense. It's exactly the point. So maintain an intelligent understanding and a respect for what Chazal are doing. It's not just stop making things up. It links to a profound sense of history in my Sebrachus, what the underlying kochas are in terms of the Kabbalistic, which is itself a rounded off mythology, in terms of the Kabbalistic understanding of it. And in the end, if you understand a multi-leveled presentation of the Gemara, you will see the most amazing things. But do not take them as cause and effect or a description of the actual material world, the scientific world, except on a different level than the one that you're used to, the current Western paradigm. Okay, anyway, so now let us go on. And with that, hopefully we will be able to get things straight. So the next thing that we got up to, is Al Hazvaot. Now, it would be a Zva'a if I don't drink, because Barnea is going to get to me. So the next question we had was Al Hazvaot, and I wish you all L'chaim, L'chaim Tevim, L'shalim, Erev Rosh Hashanah's, Erev Moshe Rabbeinu's Yahrzeit. We could start celebrating today. Pitka Tava. Al Hazvaot. Now, what indeed are Zva'ot? Now, as Omar Rav Katina, Aguha. Aguha was the word for earthquake at the time of the Gemara. And Rav Katina was walking around the road, and he passes by the house of this Ov. An Ov is a magician that uses bones, so it's called Uva Tamya. So it's a type of necromancy. And all of a sudden, there was an earthquake. Gonar Gua means, Rashi says, that's the single verb for the earth was shaking, right? Shuddering. It was trembling. So Rav Katina says through the window, hey, does Mr. Ov know what this earthquake is? So the guy shouts out, Katina, you try to make fun of me. Amaylo Yadan, of course I know. It's all because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers Klal Yisrael, that Ashriyim Bitzar Benumoto Olam, he's so sad that he drips two tears that fall into the ocean, and that causes the whole world to shake. And that's what an earthquake is. So if Katina says, you, Mr. Uvatam, you're a phony, and everything that you say is a phony. Because if what you were saying were true, then every earthquake should have two quakes. It should go gua gua because there are two tears. Now, actually, it was Rav Katina who was lying because every earthquake does go gua gua. And of course, that's a reference to aftershakes, right? So there always is a gua gua. But Rav Katina was afraid that, you know, that was such a touching explanation that people are going to follow it. They're going to really take it seriously. And the truth is, it does go gua gua of it. The reason he did not want to be moda that the guy might be saying something intelligent is and obviously, since an aftershake is not of the same power as the initial earthquake itself, so afterquakes are different, so he pretended that it was, but he knew for a fact that actually it was true. Again, very much indicating, I mean, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu was crying and dripping tears, I mean, the whole thing is crazy. But the idea, therefore, is once again, like everything else in these dafim. Rav Katina di Deyama, what is Rav Katina's explanation in terms of Agadata of an earthquake? It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tsar, is that he puts his hands together as if clapping them. And that's because it says in the Pasuk, V'gam ani akeh chapi el kapi v'anichoti chamati. I'm so angry at what's going on in the world that when I clap my hands together to get rid of some of my frustration, so then the earth shakes. Rabbi Nosson Amar, we find that the Pasuk also speaks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu sighing because it says, V'hanichoti chamati bam v'inechamti. So if I will hanichoti, it means that I express myself in the way that a human being would express himself in pain. And in doing so, I at least find some nechama. So each one is taking these psukim in a way, was the thing that the Uva Tamya said was not based on a pasuk, it was based on a self-created mythology. Over here, he's creating an image that the pasuk uses, and therefore he feels it has a right to take that image. Each one utilizes a different pasuk for different imagery, which all expresses the idea that the Ov was expressing, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry and frustrated. For Rabbanan Amre, he's so angry he's kicking. So he's kicking the Rekia, because after all, it does say in the pasuk, Heidad Kedorchim, Heidad Kedorchim, as Yirmiyahu points it, uses the metaphor. So it's as if he's saying Heidad, which is such calling people together, like the people that are sitting there banging, trampling the grapes. So there he shouts, El Kol Yoshvei Haaretz, out of frustration. And that's what it is that we say. Rav Acher bar Yaakov takes another pasuk. It says, Ko amar Hashem, Hashamayim kisi ve'aretz adom raglai. So if the aretz is considered to be a footstool, so then the things that take place on the aretz, like earthquakes, can be seen as expressions of a footstool. And that would mean that dochek et raglav tachat kisei hakavod. So the metaphor would be that I'm so upset and so angry, I'm sticking my feet under my footstool, and that makes the footstool shake. Since these are metaphors that are found in the Nevi'im Gufa, so because of that, we can use them as ways of understanding the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's matzav ruach, so to speak, in terms of the earthquakes. What about thunder? Ala ra'amim. My ra'amim. So how do we relate to thunder? I mean, what is this, stam noise? Omar Shmuel, well, it's a pasuk. Ko ram cha bagalgal, hey iru verakim tevel, ragzavatir asha aretz. So what does it say in the pasuk? It says the thundering of your thunder was in the wind. Lightning lit up the earth. And because of that, there was all of this trembling and noise on the earth. So that must mean that it's part of the actual thunder, lightning are all interrelated as part of basically banging into each other. And that's the pshat. Rabbanan Amrei, these are caused by another pasuk. L'kol tito amon mayim b'shamayim. The sound of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's putting tons of water in the sky. So then we can relate to that sound as the clouds that are pouring water out one into the other. Rav Acher bar Yaakov says, no, we already saw that it has to do with a iru brakim tevel. So then that means that it has to do with the sound of the lightning, right? So how does lightning make a sound? Well, I would guess that we should look at it like this, that the strong lightning, it hits a cloud, and that will shatter all of the frozen water that's in the cloud that was solid pieces, and that busts it up, and you hear that. Rav Ashi says, well, I mean, but it's relating it to the wind, isn't it? So that would mean that you could look at it as there being clouds that have areas that are of lower pressure, and then the wind blows over those low pressure areas, and that makes a sound. It would be the same way that you find when wind blows over an empty barrel, it makes a sound. And actually, Rav Acher bar Yaakov makes a heck of a lot of sense, because in terms of experientially, you always first see a lightning flash, and then you hear the sound of thunder, and then you get rain. So why does it go in that order? It makes a lot of sense. The lightning hit the frozen water in the cloud. The energy busted it up. You hear the sound of the bust up, and then the pieces fall down as rain. There you go. So that means that the pasuk can be translatable into our experience. Al haruchot. So what exactly are ruchot? Are ruchot anytime that there's a soft wind or what? Omer Abaye, no. Ruach is a zapha. It's like a serious hurricane. The Omer Abaye, gemira de zapha b'layla yalohavi. We also have this gemara that zaphas don't happen at night. What are you talking about? We see them happening at night all the time. Well, chazina that they do. No, that's because it started in the day, because it needs to have the energy of the sun that's causing the differential in the temperature. Once it gets moving, obviously it'll keep moving, and it builds itself. The Omer Abaye. We also have a Gemara that a true Zafa, which is like a tornado-like, that Rashi relates it to Turbil, which is a turbine effect, Well, it could be he's referring to a turbine, a tornado turbine. And that doesn't go on for more than 2 hours. What do you mean? But we do see storms that go on, like, for days. No, no. Those are separate storms. Each one stops, and it could be that there are other ones that you experience as a one continuum, but it isn't. It's not, no particular disturbance goes on for more than 2 hours. Okay. On the lightning, what do you say? Baruch Shekocho Ugvurato Male Olam. What exactly is that? It says Rava. It's what we call Baraka. Even a single bolt of lightning is enough. Omar Rava. A single lightning, Baraka Yechida, and white lightning, Baraka Chivara, and it's a loose lightning, and Baraka Yerukota, a yellow-colored lightning, and clouds that come up in the western corner and go back in the southern corner, and two clouds which are heading towards each other because they're on different levels in the sky. They look like they're heading for a collision. Those are not things to make a bracha on, because they would be kashyan. Those are bad signs. And l'may nafkamina, what do we have to? Oh, it's a bad sign. Let me boy rachame. You have to daven that you shouldn't be damaged by these signs. But this is only true in the nighttime. Things in the morning don't mean anything. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak. Yes, clouds in the morning have no meaning for your deciding on the weather. Let bo meshasha. In the morning, things come and go. Like it says, Chastechem kanan boker. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making fun of Klal Yisroel, he says, yeah, you do all kinds of great things, like the clouds in the morning, meaning you're there for a minute and then you're gone, you know? Omelet of Papala Abaya, but how's that possible? It's a famous saying that people have that goes like this. And remember, Papa often asks from the way that people say things, because any cliché has only become a cliche because it's so much part of human experience. So how could you say something which goes against the cliche? It's amazing. Don't people say, and it goes like this, Kad miftach bave mitra. When you open up your door, it's raining. I say to you, Mr. Bar Chamra, Mr. Donkey Driver, I would advise you to take your sack that you were going to fill up with grain and go around marketing, take your sack, fold it up, and use it as a pillow to go back to sleep. Because believe me, you don't need to go out today because you ain't going to make any money. Why? Because it's going to be raining all day, and everybody's going to assume that that's going to mean that there's going to be a lot of cheaper wheat that's available later, and nobody is going to be buying. You know, they're not going to be shipping any wheat today. So go back to sleep. So how do you explain that? If people say that, it means that the morning weather actually defines the day. No, that low kasha. Amazing that this is viewed as a kasha. So it's not a kasha because it depends. If you've got a morning rain where the whole sky is overcast and it looks like it's a serious storm coming up, that, of course, you have to take seriously. But, you know, the little thin clouds that you get in the morning, it is just basically a water vapor that's rising from the earth in the morning. That disappears very quickly. That, of course, is an ani book. Omer Rabbi Alexander, Omer Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. You should know that the whole point of thunder was for people to be scared of it. It doesn't serve any purpose. And therefore, it's your experience of the thunder that's meaningful. God made a world in which primitives are frightened. So you want to be in awe of the thunder and do teshuva, right? If you see a rainbow up in the sky, you should fall on your face and respect it, because it says, "Kimar'eh hakeshet asher yihyeh ba'anan." That is the Marek Vod Hashem. And then it says, "Ve'er'eh ve'epol alpanai." So Yecheskel says that he bowed in front of this Mara. You should do the same. If somebody who did that in Eretz Yisrael, they would curse him and lie it ala b'mara. What? It looks like you're bowing down to the rainbow. You're crazy. But you should definitely say a bracha on the rainbow. Now that mashma'ut is aval, is mashma that we're taking the rainbow here as something that is a gilui kvod hashchina. Just so that you should know, there is a netziv. There's an amazing netziv. And the netziv says that based on this, the steer of how we view the rainbow, that we view the rainbow as something you're not allowed to look at, you get blind if you look at it, and then the whole conversation between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and was there a rainbow in your days, and so on and so forth. So based on a lot of different sugyas, the Netziv comes up with an amazing thing. He says that there's two different senses of rainbow in Chazal. There's the rainbow that you see for a second in a storm when you suddenly get some light. And then there's these gorgeous rainbows that will stay out there for 15 minutes and the whole sky is covered and it's a gorgeous day and everybody's out there looking at this incredibly beautiful phenomena and so on. So he says there's two completely different things. The phenomena which is out there and which is long-lasting, that's an incredible, beautiful giloy, and there's nothing wrong, adarabba, but that's what you're supposed to really appreciate. And that's what the Gemara is talking about over here, that it's kamar ha'keshet asher, but I mean, after all, if it weren't like that, so why would we be saying, you know, kamar ha'keshet asher ba'anan mara kohen? I mean, all the things that we're saying are nice things about the kohen. Now we're saying all of a sudden he's a siman of klala. I mean, that doesn't make sense. And many things like that he brings. And therefore, there's two completely different things. There's the element of bris that is expressed in an instantaneous re'iyah of the keshet to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is warning you, you know, this thing could be dangerous. It's a good thing I got this bris and promised not to destroy all your jerks. So therefore, this avo bruche, you certainly are mevarech, and you should say, and that is that the rainbow serves. This says that they were kovei on any type of rainbow. Boruch Zocher HaBrit, and in the Brayta it says Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher ben Yochanan ben Broka said to expand on that and say Neman beBrito veKayam beMa'amaro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be Mekayim what he said even if it weren't a bris. Kol Shekein if it's a bris, and Omer of Papa we should say, because then both of them we should say Zocher HaBrit Neman beBrito veKayam beMa'amaro. And as Tosis points out over here, this doesn't mean that it's normally when Papa says that, it means that you end it with a new bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem. That's not what it means over here. It's a single short bracha, and that's the girsa of the single short bracha. Al haharim the al hagivot. So you're supposed to say Osem Ayser Bereshis. What? I understand. And everything that we said up to now, that we said Kochu Gvuraso Malay Olam, they're not Ayser Bereshis. If the idea is that you want to experience elements that come from Ayser Bereshis, then why wasn't that the bracha on all these other things? Doesn't it say that lightning was Barakim Lamatar Asa? So then it says Osa, it was Osa Oretz Bigvuraso, Barakim Lamatar Asa. So apparently it's part of Ayser Bereshis. Omra by the Mishnah is all interrelated. Kroch v'tani. You can have, Rashi learns you need two brachas for all those phenomena, which is kochu gvuraso ma'ale olam on things that actually go over a wide distance, and osam ayser bereshit. Whereas these later ones, you can't say kochu gvuraso ma'ale olam because only people that are locally around this mountain are going to appreciate this mountain, or in this storm are going to appreciate it, and so on. Tosis learns that this is giving you an option. You could say either Kocho Gvurato Balei Olam or Osem Maaseh Bereshit as you relate to it. Rava Amar, when it comes to the things that we said in the first part, so you have both brachas, Kocho Balei Olam, Osem Gvurato, Osem Maaseh Bereshit. But obviously these latter ones only could be Maaseh Bereshit because they don't fill up the world. You can't say Kocho Balei Olam Lecha. You can't just say all of them should be Kroch V'tani. Om Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi. If the sky is truly clear, you make a bracha. When is that? Om Rabbaya. Well, if it's been raining the entire night, and in the morning you get this beautiful wind out of the north, and it blows away every last piece of remaining dirt in the sky and moisture in the sky, and then everything just glistens, and it's this gorgeous clarity. And that's Megalalu L'Shamaya, that's when you make that bracha. But this argues on Rafram Bar Papa and Rav Chista, because he said there is no such thing since the Churban HaBayis, and since we live after the Churban HaBayis, we should not make that bracha, because B'yom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash Lo Nir'et Rekiah B'Tahorata, we don't even know what a beautiful sky looks like anymore. Sheneemar Al Bish Shamayim Kadrut, that the entire sky is covered with darkness, v'sak asim ksutam. And I turned that cover into sackcloth as an indication of the mourning over the Churban HaBayit. Tana Rabbanan, now we get to the issues that I mentioned earlier about the bracha of Chama. So Birkat HaChama it's called. HaRo'eh Chama b'tkufata, Levana b'gvurata, Kochavim b'mesilotam, Mazalot kisidram, Omer Baruch Oseh Ma'aseh Vereshit. So when you get to any of these things, and we'll talk about what they are in a moment, you make, again, the connection to my separations. And when does that happen? Omer Abaye, well, it happens every 28 years. Kol Esrim v'shmona shnin. And then the entire Machzor starts all over again. V'nafla Tkufat Nisan b'Shabtai. And that would mean that the beginning of Tkufat Nisan, which falls out on a Tuesday night, meaning the beginning of Wednesday, is in the hour that Shabtai, Saturn, is in charge of the world. And that is Be'urta Detzlat Nige Arba. And that comes out on Tuesday evening, right at the end of Tuesday, which is 6 o'clock Jewish time, which starts the night of Wednesday. And that's the only time that you will have, and it takes 28 years to be able to get back to that exact thing. Okay, I am not going to take up your time now, but I will tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, because I would like to finish. I thought I would have time, but then I decided it's worth doing this whole introduction. I did send you out a PDF so that you could see what Rashi writes. I don't know why there does not seem to be any awareness of this, unless I just, I'm not finding it, but I looked it up on the internet. I can't find anyone who recognizes what's really happening over here. The belief in that time was that every hour has a Tsar, so to speak, in charge of it, which is one of the so-called seven planets. Now, the seven planets were not really planets, but they were planets in the original sense of the word, moving bodies. Planets means wander, to wander. And that the only thing that wander in the sky to us would be the visible planets. And that starts from Mercury and goes, takes you all the way out to Jupiter and Saturn, but that's it because you don't see anything else without a telescope. And that's five. And then you get also the sun and the moon to make seven. So if you make that into a constantly going, starting in order, which I'll talk about tomorrow, the order and so on, it turns out that there's a Seder to the days of the week of those seven bodies. And that at 6 o'clock, at the beginning of the night, again, 6 o'clock has nothing to do with 6 o'clock on the clock that is used today, although unfortunately Lubavitch has decided that it does, and therefore you can't make a bracha at a wedding because Mars insane, ridiculous at between 5 o'clock. I think it has to do with the clock. But anyway, so at 6 o'clock, you have at the beginning of the night, you have the order of the various every single day. There's another one of those bodies in charge. Those bodies that are in charge are the basis of the names of the days of the week. And they're all names for Avodah Zarah, which is why it's a horrible thing to use those names, even though they come from the Seder of exactly these mazoles. So since Saturn is the beginning of Friday night, meaning the beginning of Shabbos, so Saturday is called Saturday because of Saturn. Since the moon is what's on the beginning of Monday, so Monday is Moonday, and so on. And this continues on. Even if you take a look at the names of the Romance languages, they literally use Mercury and the actual names. Mars, they use Mars and so on and so forth. In English, they went to the Norwegian gods. So then instead of using the Latin names, they use Norwegian names, which are, you know, like Woden for Wednesday and Thor for Thursday, but those are the same gods. Those were Jupiter, Thor is Jupiter, and so on and so forth. The Friday, the Frigg talk, which is Frida or Frigg. This is all Norse mythology. Those became the names of the gods that moved on into English from Germanic into early English, and it's absolutely nutty for a Jew to use those words instead of Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, and so on and so forth, right? But what can you do? Anyway, it's one of the things my father, Zatzal, used to say all the time. It's so amazingly true. You know, well, Minag Yisrael is Torah, and, you know, Klal Yisrael always works out things. says, yeah, right. That's why they're over constantly on a mitzvah, the Oraisa, of not counting by the days of the months of the year. And that's why they're over on an Issa D'Oraisa of mentioning the Shemites of the Avodah Zarah when they choose even in Yiddish, Muntik, Zuntik, yeah, yeah, right. And that's a sign of how much you could trust Klal Yisrael to do things right. Anyway, so it was one of his favorite beefs. Okay, so tomorrow we'll go into how this works out. But if you try to get everything to work out right, meaning for these planets, so-called planets, to be in the right place at the very time that the sun was put into place, which is the beginning of Yom Revi'i at the Bria of the Chama, at the same time that the Tkufa falls out at the same time of the day, which is a smaller cycle, which is every 5 years that starts over again. As you can easily see, if you take Tkufa of Shmuel, that means that if you divide the 365 and a quarter days of the year, you end up with every single one of those Tkufas being the 91 days and 7.5 hours. The 7.5 hours every year, the four times of the four seasons, are going to add up to 30 hours. 7.5 and 7.5 is 15 times 2 is 30, right? But that means that you will always be 24 hours plus another 6 between each one of the Tkufas. Now that means that the Tkufa will always fall out one day, but 6 hours later in the next year. So because of that, the Tkufa of Nisan, if it begins at the very beginning of the night, which is 6 o'clock, so then the next year, it's going to be the day later at 12 midnight. The year after that, it's going to be a day later. It's going to be delayed now by 6 hours. It'll be 6 a.m. and then it'll be 12 noon, and then it'll go back to 6 o'clock in the fifth. That's the smaller cycle. But that will not coincide with getting the correct planet, so to speak, at the right place at that same time. So we're trying to get all of these phenomena together, which, as I pointed out, is not even true, because we do not paskin like Shmuel, because the year is not 365 and a quarter days. You could throw it out right there. And because all of this business of the keach of these various planets is all nonsense anyway, it's astrological nonsense that is a reference to other inyanim perhaps, but has nothing to do with our experience or real keches and so on. And so because of that, the whole thing is a joke. And yet, as the Chazon Ish says, it doesn't matter. It's the way that Chazal were koveya our relationship and go right ahead and make that bracha. We'll talk about the details of it together. Rabbi Yehuda says, and here we learned that Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah was going l'shitasa, you're supposed to be more and more meduyak. Haroa, hayama gadol, you make the bracha, baruch hosei yama gadol, but only if it's seen leprakim. What does prakim mean? Amar mebarab, it means every 30 days. But if it's within 30 days, don't make that bracha again. Another thing that you can say that relates you back to my separations is when you see a natural phenomena that's impressive and that has not changed since my separations. So that gives you a connection. Now, the problem is that humans have a tendency to mess up the earth and they change things. So you rarely get to see things the way that they were at the time of my separations. But you should know that if you're standing at the Euphrates at what's known as the Bavel Bridge, which is a famous bridge, and you're from that point up, you should know that the path of the Euphrates has not been changed by industry or anything else. And that you could say, oh, it's my Sabaratius. However, that's not true anymore, says the Gemara, because now the Persians have built all types of dams, changed the entire course of the Prat in the area of that Bavel Bridge. Now you'd have to go all the way upstream to the area of the Shavor and up. And that's from, according to Rabbi Yosef, from Ihi Dekira and up. So upstream. So now there's only a little bit of the pras that you could say Oser Maisa Breshis on. And says Rami Baramba, the same thing is true about the Diglas, which is the Tigris River. You can also say it if you're standing on the Shabistina Bridge. You can say Baruch Oser Breshis if you're facing upstream. Why is the Tigris referred to as the Chidekel in the story in Bereshis? Because again, we're looking back to Bereshis now, because the whole idea is Oser Maisa Bereshis. So how do we relate to the Shemus that was given in Bereshis? So my Chidekel, Omer Avashi Meimav Chadin Vekalin. The water is very sharp, so it could be that it has a sharper taste, or it causes you to be sharp. It develops your mind. And they're also light. Rashi says they weigh less. They have less sediment in them. And therefore, there's less specific density, which also means you won't feel as full by drinking them. And why is the Nahar Parat called Parat in the Gan Eden? Shemimav Parim V'Ravim, because it grows even when we don't see evidence of rain that is causing it to grow. V'yomar Rava, you know why people in my town of Mechuzah are really very clever and sharp? It's because they drink the water from the river of Kalin V'Chadim, so it makes them smart. And Haide Gichure, why are they all so reddish? That's because they have sexual relations in the daytime, and that causes them to be reddish like the sun. Why are their eyes constantly shifty? I mean, they are very shifty people. But what is the physical reason? Rava did not like his people in Mechuzah, as we saw for many other things. Why do they have such shifty eyes physically? Well, you'll notice they don't put windows in their homes, so they live in darkness. So their eyes are constantly roaming because they need to find contrast between darker and lighter areas in order to just get a sense of where they are. So it's Mishum the Dairei Babayit Afel. Okay, the next piece of the Mishnah says, on the Geshamim, you say, Boruch HaTov V'Hametiv. Is that true? Doesn't it say that Rabbi Avu says, or some even say it's a Braita, that when do you start making a bracha on rain, if it's like the first rain? When the chosen comes out to meet the kala. Remember the whole Gemara in Tinius, we view the rains as being an act of sexual penetration. So we talk about it over here also as chosen v'kala. That's why it's called revia. And those terms in fertility are obvious. And with the chosen comes out to meet the kala, so there's different birushim. As the Rambam simply learns, it means that different flows of rains hit each other coming from different areas in the streets. Or the pshat is that there's so much water on the ground that when a drop of rain falls, it causes the water that's there to pop up as if it's coming to greet it. And what do you say? Mai mevorchim. Now you would expect it to say Baruch Atah V'Ameti, but that's not what it says. It says Modim Anachtu Nochal Kol Tipa V'Tipa Shoradat Alanu. And Rabbi Yochanan says, add the part from Nishmat that goes Ilu Pinu Malei Shiraka Yam Einanu Maspikim Lo Dot Lecha Hashem Elokeinu, and say this until the words in Nishmat of Kol Kol Malei Fanecha Tishtachaveh Baruch Atah Hashem Rov HaHodaot, which we think means most of the thanks we should give. Most of the thanks. Why shouldn't we give you all of the thanks? Says Rava, no, you're right. You should say El HaHodaot. Rav Papa says, okay, so really you should say both of them. You should say Rov HaHodaot VeEl HaHodaot, because the truth is Rov HaHodaot does not mean most. It means the many HaHodaot. But in order to avoid the misunderstandings, say the El HaHodaot on the immense number of Rov HaHodaot. But anyway, how do we explain the contradiction? Is it Atov HaMetiv, or is it this complex tefillah, lokasha? On Atov HaMetiv, it's talking about that you heard about it, not that you saw it. So you wake up in the morning and the kids tell you, oh, Dad, it was pouring last night. Oh, so then that's a Shmua Tovah, so you say Baruch Atov HaMetiv. But if you actually see it starting to rain, then you say that whole thing. Makes no sense, says the Gemara, if it's talking about that you heard about it. So then it's included in the Shmua Tovot in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Absurot Tovot, Omer Baruch HaTov HaMetiv. So that's not a good answer. Okay, you're right. It's talking about that he did see it, but it makes a big difference. The whole thing about we are made it to you on every drop, that's talking about when the rains just started. So there's a little bit of water. But when it says HaTov HaMetiv, it means that there's real rain that's really making a difference to the earth. Or, you know what, you could say it's talking about both of them. You could say it's talking about there's a lot of rain. Well, gosh, it depends. If you own personally, you own your land, so then you have to say Baruch HaTov HaMetiv, because it's for you. If you don't personally own land, so then you say Baruch Hashem, we thank you for every drop, and so on. But it's not your HaTova. Says the Gemara, what? That's true. If you own land, you say HaTov HaMetiv. It says Beferish in the Mishnah that if you built a house or you buy new clothes, you say Shechiyonu V'Kiyamonu. If it's for you and for others, so then you say, you may be HaTov HaMetiv. It's a question whether we should have that girsa over here, because we're going to give that as a teretz. Answers the Gemara, Lo Kasha, depends. If you have a shutafut in land, So then you say, Baruch Atah Uvah Meitiv. If there's no shutafut, it's something, then you say, Shehachiyanu. And that's Beferish in a Braita. Vatanya, Ktsaro Shadavar. Look, let's just put it succinctly, okay? On your own happiness, you say, Shehachiyanu. Al Shalov, Al Shalachirim, that is something good. Shal Chaviro, you say, Baruch Atah Uvah Meitiv. And that would be the difference.